Coming up on Path to Zero.
I have never seen so many people working in the field of science on a common theme of improving energy storage than I see it today.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, Path to Zero listeners. In this episode of Path to Zero, we have an opportunity to talk to one of the most respected experts in the battery world. Bob Galyen was the lead battery engineer on the EV1, General Motors' first mass-produced electric car that debuted in 1996. Galyen led cell and pack development for auto supplier Magna International, and most recently he served as chief technology officer at one of the largest battery suppliers in the world, China's Contemporary Amperex Technology, or CATL. He's now heading up his own consulting business, Galyen Energy, advising battery makers and the Department of Energy on promising battery technology. Bob, I am really looking forward to this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us and welcome to Path to Zero.
Well, I do appreciate you inviting me to participate today, Tucker. I'm looking forward to the questions.
Oh, you got such a great resume and so much experience. We're going to go so many different directions, but let's go right to it right now. Our president has called for 50% of vehicle sales to be battery electric by 2030. I talk with a lot of people that talk about the complexities of battery manufacturing, about supply chain, about raw materials. It all figures into that goal. Bob, do you think we can get to a spot where 50% of vehicle sales are electric by 2030?
It would be a huge undertaking to try to think that 50% of the vehicles sold in the United States would be electrified at that point. That's such a short period of time. We're only 8 years away from that here in 2022. And the reason I say that, Tucker, because during my tenure while I worked in China to help build up CATL there, the amount of growth that we see today from when we started roughly in 2012 to where we're at in 2022, the total volume of cars sold in China today is no more than about 15% of the total vehicles on the road today. Their targets are less than that of the United States, but the problem is we don't have the proper infrastructure built up today to be able to achieve the kind of production volumes that are necessary to hit these kind of targets. So it would be a huge undertaking for the OEMs as well as the battery manufacturers to ramp up that quickly. Stop and think a minute, Tucker, from the standpoint of manufacturing plant build. It takes roughly 2 years to build a battery gigafactory. It takes another year to dress it out with the capital equipment and commission the machines that you put in that factory, and then another year to produce the validation samples that the OEMs require from a full manufacturing plant before they will go in a full commissioning of production. So you're already looking out 5 to 6 years before you can really turn the switch on a plant that will ramp up to gigawatt level of production. So being able to go from where we are today, a couple of percentage points on electrified vehicles to that of a 50%, that would be a major undertaking. So the answer to your question, Tucker, is no, I don't think we can achieve that. Now, can we achieve it by the year 2040? Yeah. Can we make it by 2050? Yeah, we may be able to see a complete conversion from ICEs to electrified vehicles, but it's that initial surge of getting your production volumes up, both from the car manufacturers as well as the battery manufacturers, to be able to achieve what the president's trying to achieve.
Let me go, since you've gone to 2050, let me go there with you right now. Do you think that by 2050, cars will still be using lithium ion batteries?
Tucker, there are so many new technologies that are being developed in the battery space right now. It's hard to imagine that we would be 100% lithium ion batteries at that time. In my consulting work that I do at my own company called Galleon Energy. I'm working on no less than 8 different battery technologies today, and they are all quite diverse and different from each other.
Yeah, I'm always quick to say, I think that by 2050, I feel pretty confident about how things look from now to 2040, but somewhere out 2040, 2045, and into 2050, certainly the wild card is battery technology. I think it'll be completely different, whether you're talking about batteries used in mobile things like cars or off-road equipment, and certainly battery storage. We'll talk a little bit more about that. You know, as I studied this, studied you and studied, you know, how to be prepared for this podcast, came across a lot of fascinating quotes and a consistent tie into China. So we're going to keep coming back to your quotes in China, but one quote you had kind of startled me. And you said, by the end of the decade, China will have more than twice the capacity to produce lithium ion batteries than the rest of the world combined. You still believe in that forecast?
Well, think at it from this fundamental standpoint, Tucker. They have 4 times to 5 times as many people in their country as we do in ours. Okay, they are the most populous nation on the planet, approaching 1.5 billion people. Obviously, they're going to have 5 times the volume necessity to achieve the same standards of life that we have here in the United States. Think about all the other nations around the world that are lagging way behind China in terms of battery technology. You've got South America, Australia, India, Africa, all these different countries around the world that will still be slow in ramping up their country's production of batteries. I still believe that China will have twice the volume of the rest of the world combined. Just the company that I retired from, CATL, produces over 30% of the world's batteries by themselves. That doesn't include all the other battery manufacturers in China. So given the consideration that they have a larger population and a higher need than what all the other countries around the world have, and the lag time that it takes them to ramp up, it's clearly going to be ahead of the world by that factor.
You know, as you travel the world and you see the different ways people live and operate and the different levels of economies and progress, you know, you mentioned there China, India, Russia, I think often about Africa. Do you really believe that even in passenger vehicles, let's say by 2040, do you really believe that battery electric vehicles will be the way consumers travel?
I do believe that will be the case, because they're finding out that electrified vehicles are far more efficient than internal combustion engines and require much less maintenance. This is something that I was quite interested in when I was in a conference in Beijing one day, when I heard two of the Japanese car manufacturers making their claims that, well, people take care of these electric cars far better than that we ever anticipated. They were plugging in their cars 1.5 to 1.6 times more frequent than what they were predicting based on the demographics of what they had studied in Japan. So when you stop and think about it, the convenience of driving your car home and plugging it in is so easy, rather than stopping at a refueling station. People will use that opportunity to get the charge back into their vehicles, so they always have a full tank of fuel before they leave home. So I think the necessity and the convenience of electrified vehicles and the lower maintenance schedule is going to drive that even faster. So that's a good question.
Interesting. So, you know, we talk a lot about batteries and battery production. You know, again, our president talks about invoking War Powers Act to bring that back into the U.S. What is your view of the best way for other countries, and let's start with the U.S., but it's certainly broader than just the U.S., what is your view on the best way that other countries can respond to get some security of supply for the supply chain around batteries?
Well, first and foremost, it's being able to harvest Mother Nature's bounty of those materials that are necessary to build the batteries. This is where a lot of people in our government here in the United States sometimes fall short or don't understand. you can talk about building batteries, but if you don't have the raw materials, you don't have a chance of building those batteries. You have to mine those minerals, or you have to extricate those materials from Mother Earth one way, shape, or form. But then they miss the second important step, and that's the processing of those materials. In processing, you have to take those ores or those brines or whatever it is that you're trying to extricate the minerals from and be able to process those into something that's useful that can be built into a battery. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm talking about just lithium batteries, but look at the past lead acid battery business. It took 40 to 50 years to develop that supply chain in such a way that those batteries are over 99% recyclable. Over years of development, you will find the same thing happen with lithium batteries and any other battery technology that comes to pass, that you will figure out how to take those minerals that are in those batteries and reconstitute them and reuse them time and time again. So, Tucker, it's kind of a combination of taking Mother Nature's bounty from the precious soils or the oceans or the brines that we have underground and turn them into something that's useful and then be able to reconstitute them again and again and again multiple times in the future. I think only time will tell of how good a job we did as human beings on the planet to take care of our next generations.
Well, lead acid batteries continue to have a place, maybe not necessarily in mobile transportation, but even in energy storage?
Well, lead acid still plays a very key role in the worldwide storage because many of the third world nations around the globe still can't afford lithium batteries. You just look at the number of lead acid batteries that are still in the mix. It's still the king of batteries out there when you look at the total volume of batteries that are produced, but lithium is in the process of taking it over. There's no doubt about that. Many of the lead acid battery applications, such as fork trucks and even mobility sector where lead acid batteries have been used in floor scrubbers and cleaning machines, even in mobility sector for medical equipment, you're seeing now lithium batteries taking over lead acid battery as a predominant battery source.
What is the most important thing that you think private industry and government should do to work together to improve the battery supply chain?
Well, that's a great question, Tucker. And I get asked this more frequently in my consulting jobs by many of the investment communities. And I answer that question with what I call the four pinnacles of why China was so successful. So maybe I'll twist your question just a little bit and modify it to say, why was China so successful in doing this as a part of a social economic driver? There were four key factors. Number one was government support. The government did a great job in China of protecting the young fledgling industry of batteries by putting incentive packages in place for the OEMs and for the battery manufacturers and also for the general consumers to go buy the cars. So they did a really good job of architecting those kind of incentive packages, both at the car level, the battery manufacturing level, and the consumer level, so that people would be incentivized to buy these vehicles and get some value out of them. One of the most important things for the consumer that bought electric vehicles in China was to be able to drive it into the major cities every day. There were no restrictions on electrified vehicles, and you could plug in your car sometimes for free in large metropolitan areas. The second factor was private investment. The equity factor was there. There were lots of millionaires and billionaires in China that wanted to make a higher return on their investment. So they chose batteries because they could see that in the future, there was a social need for having electrified vehicles in China. So they went out and invested heavily into the battery market. So those guys made good returns on their money that they invested in that area. The third area was available technology. You know, one of the most important things that Americans need to hear from me, I think, is that the Chinese didn't steal manufacturing technology or battery technology from the United States. They were making consumer electronic batteries for a full decade before they got into electrified vehicles. Many of those companies were making batteries for video players, cell phones, listening devices, video projectors, and video recording devices, and those kind of things. So they worked on that for well over a decade. At the same time they're building those batteries, they're developing their supply chain by mining and by processing capability buildup. Now, the fourth area that was really important for the socialization, if you will, of batteries is what I call the M&Ms. Not those nice chocolatey things that I like to snack on, but those are the man and the machine. They did not have the right machines to build batteries in the gigawatt level of production at the parts per billion failure rate when I first arrived in China. It took time to develop those machines in such a way that we could build high volumes and really, really high quality type of products. And the other part of the M&Ms is demand. You have to educate and train the people. You have to create a culture of quality and of intelligence in the manufacturing plant, because battery plants are nothing more than a sophisticated chemical processing plant that turns a bunch of noxious chemicals into something that's perfectly safe and effective of storing electrons for useful work. So, Tucker, those are the four main areas that answer the question that you asked me in a different way of those key elements of success for China. And I think those same four key elements of success will work in North America, and it will also work in Europe.
Do you think we can be cost competitive with the Chinese, or are they too far ahead of us?
Today, they are too far ahead of us for the fundamental reason that they've got a decade's lead on us. They know how to mine, they know how to process, and they sure know how to manufacture.
So it's interesting there. I've read quite a bit. You know, well, first off, we see the automakers teaming up with battery companies. And I think we partly see that just so they can secure their own supply chain. But you've been pretty public that you don't think that's a good idea, that you think battery makers should be independent of car companies. Why is that?
Well, to make sure I understand your question, Tucker, I do not think it's a good idea necessary for the car manufacturers themselves to become battery manufacturers, because many of them do not have the intellectual knowledge, nor do they have the manpower to dive into such a thing. If they want to build that infrastructure, they almost need to find a joint venture partner that already has that technology and can build it. You see this happening around the world today, where car companies are partnering with specific battery manufacturers. You see every day in the news, there's a new joint venture that's come out with a OEM with a battery manufacturer. That model works well, okay? I'm not saying that that is a bad thing. I'm saying that the car manufacturers themselves thinking that they can be the battery manufacturers, not necessarily the best idea unless they build that culture within their company. And I still think that there's always going to be some animosities between those people that are working in a part of a factory that's building batteries versus the guy that's building the cars. I do believe that is the case.
That's a great answer. Thank you very much. You know, we read a lot about where the batteries are being made, perhaps where the minerals are being mined or processed, and quite a bit of conversation that's often not confirmed, but at least suspected, that a lot of human rights violations, and they're being built in areas where maybe human rights aren't as important as they are in other parts of the country. I mean, you're a guy that's traveled the world, you've seen a lot. Do you believe that conversation to be more accurate than not?
Well, any battery manufacturer worth their grain of salt won't touch slave labor or child labor in the Congo, the Republic of the Congo, because all of them have publicly announced that that is not something that they're going to tolerate nor accept. So you don't find any of the reputable battery manufacturers nor any of the car manufacturers that buy batteries that are made from any of that kind of labor ever being put on the marketplace with their trade name on it. So it's a good question, Tucker. And clearly we all do not want to have any kind of slave labor or labor that puts people's health or lives in jeopardy. That's just not something that's socially acceptable. And none of the battery manufacturers or car manufacturers that I work with or have worked with in the last 7 to 8 years have had that kind of a problem to worry about.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear. Thanks. And I know you've got more experience in that than most anyone we're going to talk with. Bob, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane. Energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win.
Welcome back. We're talking with Bob Galyon, one of the world's leading experts on battery technology. So let's leave consumer vehicles for just a moment and let's move more to commercial vehicles. And as I'm quick to say, vehicles that could go anywhere from class 3 to class 8 vehicles. And it's really where range and payload are real factors. They have work to do and they got to get it done. First off, do you believe in a lot of progress in battery electric vehicles in the commercial market? But as I understand it, a very different architecture of the battery from a consumer passenger vehicle. Do you have hope for that market segment as well for straight on battery electric vehicles?
Sure do, Tucker. In fact, if you really want to see something that's an eye opener, go to the Advanced Clean Technologies conference that's held out in Long Beach. And I think it's held in May this coming year. Last year when I went to it, it was amazing to see the amount of electrification that's going into vehicles of every shape, form, and size you can imagine. But most of these are for what you'd call short range hauls or last mile delivery or whatever fancy name you want to put on it. But these vehicles can go from point A to point B. And while they're at point B unloading their load, they can plug back in or in some cases have inductive charging coils that are in the parking area where the vehicle pulls over and it can self-charge itself. So there's a lot of new technologies that are being developed right now that will help eliminate a lot of the pollution in large metropolitan areas just for the mere fact that electrified delivery vehicles are becoming a reality. You see this a lot in China, you see it a lot in Europe, and I think you will see it here in the United States. But it goes on a little further than that, Tucker. It's not just the delivery vehicles and it's not just the trucking industry. One of the last things I did before I retired in China and came back home was drive a 22-ton backhoe at a company called Liaogong. This was a fully electrified backhoe that could do 8 hours of work on a single charge, and it ran perfectly quiet with no black smoke belching out of the back of it. So we're seeing a whole revolution in not only in the heavy-duty truck market for delivery from the class 3 to class 8 tractors, but you're also seeing this happen in the construction industry. I saw something on the internet the other day with John Deere Corporation as an example, with a battery trailer that's out in the middle of the field that's powering itself, plus it's got a pigtail running to three or four other tractors that are disking or plowing a field. So the electrification movement is moving into the agricultural sector, construction sector, marine sector. It's already there. If you go to the Norwegian part of the world, you go to Finland and Sweden, even in Germany, you find a lot of electrified boats today. Some of them are even autonomous, running from port to port, carrying goods from one country to another, fully electrified, and some of them autonomous. So it's a great question. And I think part of the problem is that many of the people that are listening in today may not have a clue that a lot of this kind of activity is going on worldwide.
We've had a lot of really good engineers on this program talking about engines and the modernization of engines, but the last couple engineers on really were big fans of hybrid technology. They felt like in a lot of commercial applications, the engine of the future might still be an internal combustion engine, but paired with a hybrid system, that engines were that much better and hybrid systems were that much better. Have you got a point of view on that?
Sure do. Well, let me explain. Why is it that diesel locomotives run off of electricity rather than a direct drive off the diesel engine itself? The diesel engine powers a generator that runs the electricity, that runs the armature that drives the train. They do that because electric motors at zero RPM have 100% torque. They're very efficient. So if you look into some of these heavy-duty Class 8 tractors, even locomotives for that matter, that some of these future concepts that might include a fuel cell or it might include an internal combustion engine will also have a battery pack in it that is driving an electric motor to augment or be the primary drive for the vehicle itself. Because you do get that superior torque value with an electric motor that's very difficult to get with an internal combustion drivetrain. You know, you look at some of the cars that are being put out on the road today, they're anywhere from a 6 to 9 or even 10 transmission gear sets to get the fuel economy up, because the better the gear sets are in transitioning from low speed to high speed, you get better fuel economy going up in the gear set. Well, the same thing can apply here to the big heavy duty trucks. So some of it has everything to do with gearing. A lot of it has to do with how do you architect the drivetrain with an electrified concept. So electric drive motor is a very good idea when it comes to the vehicles of the future, because you do get that high torque value with an electric motor.
Bob, tell us about your consulting business, Galyon Energy.
Well, Galyon Energy is an interesting company because it's something that I just thoroughly enjoy, because rarely does a guy get to retire from a major corporation like I did from CATL and jump into a job that he just has a joy of his life, being able to take the intellectual knowledge that he's developed throughout his career and apply it to so many different companies. This is something that our U.S. government said, Bob, you know batteries so well, you know how they're applied. Why don't you help our companies out here in the United States? So, Tucker, what I've done is spread myself a little bit then across a whole bunch of different companies that I think will help the United States get back into the game of battery technology. And it's not just about the United States, it's about the world. I consult with companies in Australia, companies in India, companies in Europe. Obviously, here in the United States, there's a whole plethora of them. But it's a joy to be able to work on those kind of things that you enjoy, in your life from all your learnings. So the 46 years that I've had the opportunity to tromp around all over the globe working for corporations like General Motors and Delphi and Magna and CATL, and ran my own business for 9 years, you develop a certain skill set of how you apply your intellectual knowledge and make the world a better place for our future generations. And that's my goal and objective, is to make a better place for our future generations to grow up.
Yeah, that's great. Love having this expertise. Let me just ask you, I've not asked you so many things I want to talk about materials and the transition of new materials or technologies. What is something you'd like to tell our listeners about kind of where we are and where we're going with batteries and battery storage, whether it be for power gen, for transportation, for construction? What would you like an interested party to know about this space?
I believe that all of the battery manufacturers and all the OEMs are aspiring to get better ESG numbers. They want to drive decarbonization throughout the entire value chain, because some people do believe that carbon is the driver behind global warming. Now, whether you believe everything you hear about global warming, some people do, some people don't. Some people are very emotional about it. Some are just absolutely ready to go fight over it. When I look out into the future, I believe that all these corporations will try to figure out how to take the bounties of Mother Nature and turn them into something useful for mankind with less carbonization, and less energy consumed to take those raw materials and turn them into something that's useful. You heard Elon Musk during his battery day make these same comments. Elon wasn't wrong. It's just, I wonder how he's going to do it, because the decarbonization of an industry is not an easy task. It takes some enormous efforts on people's part to make it work. Now, one other thing that I will make comment on, Tucker, I believe we're right at the fringe of some new major technological breakthroughs for mankind. Why do I say that? I'm a trained chemist and biologist, spent 46 years in engineering and international business. I have never seen so many people working in the field of science on a common theme of improving energy storage than I see it today. We're looking at new technologies of generating energy with windmills, solar panels, wave action, even geothermal, and many other types of what we'll call renewable energy sources. Then we need to store that, because rarely do these kind of energy generation occur at the time that it's needed. So you have to store it, and that's where the batteries come into play. And who knows, maybe batteries is going to become an antiquated technology within the next 10, 20, 30 years. We just don't know, because some young guy maybe is going to come up with a brand new concept of how we store energy in a way that we haven't contrived yet today. So my hope is that we will see something like that happen in the next few decades.
You believe it's possible that we could store energy without using a battery as we know it today?
Let's just say that some of the technologies I'm working on are at the fringe of what you just said.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, I study flow batteries and, you know, battery technology that's just completely different than we think about, certainly lead acid batteries. So it's great. Do you view battery technology as being something that's going to really drive us to be more adopting electric vehicles, I think, than I believe?
Well, batteries is the only technology we have today that's able to store energy that can be dispatchable on four wheels or two wheels or three wheels, whatever the vehicle is, 18 or...
Sure.
It's the only form of energy storage we've got today that's dispatchable and can be made relatively safe. It's not like putting a nuclear reactor in the middle of a car and having a guy driving that around, because those can be turned into weapons of mass destruction. So it's not a great idea to go put nuclear reactors on cars, no matter how small they are, because those can be coupled together and create a pretty big boom. So battery technology is, like I said, the most dispatchable we've got today, and it's the most affordable we've got today.
You view batteries as probably a superior alternative to, in fact, maybe a fuel cell?
Well, think about it for a minute, Tucker. Fuel cells require batteries to be on the same vehicle with it, because a fuel cell cannot ramp up and ramp down fast enough to be able to accommodate the drivetrain. You use the battery to accelerate from the stop sign or the stoplight, and the fuel cell is sitting there just cranking out electrons at a constant rate. It's charging the battery back up while you're driving down the highway. So it's getting ready. That battery pack system is sitting there also at a lower state of charge, so that when you come to a stop, you can regen the potential energy that's stored in the vehicle as you're coming to a stoplight or a stop sign. So this is where a lot of people in the normal population don't understand. Fuel cells don't power the car by themselves. They have to have a battery pack with it.
They drive the batteries. Interesting. And the other area that I was wanting to explore with you a little deeper is it's fascinating to me how China has really gained a near monopoly, if you will, on batteries, on minerals, on battery technology. And at least my readings had led me to believe it's as much to be a worldwide supplier. They really want to be dominant in this technology. But you see that even this competitive advantage they have today is not necessarily either a national threat or a barrier in terms of price, supply chain to the battery development around the world. You don't see that as big a threat as I do.
Tucker, there was a different reason. Why did China electrify so fast? It isn't for what the Americans think they did. I lived there for almost 8 years, and I had a wonderful opportunity to meet with Premier Li Keqiang in the Great Hall. And Premier Lee walks up to me and says, Bob, I want to thank you and Robin Zung for what you are doing at CATL because you're saving people's lives. He says, just in the four major metropolitan areas in our country lose 1.3 million people a year to respiratory failure because of the pollutants that come out of these buses and trucks that are used in the metropolitan areas of Beijing, Tianjin, Shenzhen, and Shanghai. When you look at that and you stop and think about the tax load and the social load that it has on the tax structure of any country, it doesn't matter if you're a communist state or a democratic society, if you've got that many people that are dying from respiratory failure, it's devastating to your people and to your tax structure, because you're putting millions of dollars into all those people that are suffering and dying from these respiratory failures. So it was more of a social need to electrify more than anything. The byproduct out of that improvement and socialization, if you will, of battery technology into the China culture, the byproduct of that was they had a leapfrog on everybody else in the world. You know, I'll never forget the day that I was sitting in a meeting and this guy picks up the cell phone and he shows me this. He says, Bob, we started out making these things 20 years ago. We had to develop, as I mentioned during our earlier conversation, Tucker, we have to develop the mining operations, the processing, and how to build the batteries in the first place for these small devices. All we did was take these things and scale them up to the electric vehicle size.
Interesting.
So that's how they got the head start. There was a social need because of a medical-driven ailment.
Let's have some fun, Bob. One of the fun things we'd love to do is to use a little magic. We give you a magic wand. You get to use that magic wand for one wish in the next year to make a big difference for the climate and climate change. I'll let you think about it for a second, but how would you use your magic wand?
I would wave that magic wand over all the companies around the world to help them make the materials cheaper, better, and faster in a way that makes high quality products, such as a battery, that can store energy that can be used for useful work by mankind without polluting the planet.
Bob, that is one of the best uses of a magic wand we've ever had on Path to Zero. Thank you. So we also like to thank you for the time and expertise you've shared with us by planting a tree in your name in a national forest. And you pick the forest and we do all of the work. And I know you live in Indiana. So we looked ahead to think about maybe the Hoosier National Forest, which is in southern Indiana, but perhaps you have a favorite national forest somewhere else. You got a thought in mind about your favorite national forest?
Well, let's just put it in the Hoosier National Forest here in Indiana, because Governor Holcomb may look at me adversely if I don't put the tree in Indiana. We want to make sure we get as many of those carbon molecules sucked into that tree as we possibly can. So I appreciate that. That's very kind.
It's a beautiful place, and we'll go to work on that. Bob, you have been a terrific guest. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today on Path to Zero.
Well, I appreciate your offer to have me come on today, Tucker, and thanks again for this wonderful opportunity. Keep up the good work.
That wraps up this episode of Path to Zero. You know, we always welcome your suggestions for guests to invite on the show. Shoot me an email with any comments or any questions you might have. The address is pathtozero@propane.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Path to Zero.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.